Saudi Arabian oil giant Aramco is considering a split IPO.
They're now looking at Tokyo. I mean, Tokyo is a big international exchange. It's been home to some of the largest IPOs ever, including last year's IPO of SoftBank's mobile telecom unit.
Plus, a Justice Department watchdog finds former FBI Director James Comey violated agency policy. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Before we get to those stories, here are some other top headlines we're following today. U.S. stocks climbed higher again on Thursday on the prospect of possible trade talks between the U.S. and China in September. The Dow surged 326 points, or 1.3%. The S&P 500 and the Nasdaq rose 1.3% and 1.5%, respectively. U.S. bond yields also continued their climb. The Federal Trade Commission is investigating whether e-cigarette startup Juul engaged in deceptive marketing, including targeting minors or using influencers. The company's products have been blamed for a rise in vaping among teens, which rose 78% from 2017 to 2018, according to federal data. Juul says its products are intended for adult cigarette smokers and that it has never marketed to youth. The FTC investigation comes as Altria, which has invested $12.8 billion in Juul, is engaged in merger talks with its former partner, Philip Morris International. And U.S. prosecutors are looking into new allegations of technology theft at Chinese telecom giant Huawei. We report that officials are examining instances where Huawei was accused of stealing intellectual property and exploring how the company went about recruiting employees from competitors. The investigations overlap the findings of a Wall Street Journal investigation this past May. Puerto Rico has been spared major damage by Dorian, which is now heading toward Florida as a Category 1 hurricane. Wall Street Journal reporter Ariane Campo Flores says the storm is expected to gather strength in the next few days and could climb as high as a Category 4 storm.
What's very uncertain is the path that the storm is going to take. It's projected to sort of curve to the northwest and hit somewhere along Florida's eastern coast, but the path, the cone of uncertainty, is still very wide. It encompasses virtually the entirety of Florida's east coast. The center of the track is projected right now to go roughly in the area of central Florida, like Cape Canaveral, Melbourne, that part of the state. But it could definitely veer north or it could veer south.
Meanwhile, people in the path of the storm are getting ready.
It's not reached the point where you're seeing, you know, massive lines and massive outages of supplies, but definitely there are reports that gas stations are running out of fuel. I was just getting some supplies at a supermarket, managed to get some water, but by the time I left, the shelves were bare of water. Obviously, places like public supermarket, Costco, retailers like that are constantly trying to restock the shelves. This is something that companies are used to doing down here. But yeah, it's settling in and folks are realizing that it's coming and you're starting to see the mobilization to get ready for it.
For the latest on Dorian and to track the current path of the storm, please head to our website, wsj.com. Aramco, the world's most profitable company, is planning a two-stage initial public offering. And despite wooing from London and Hong Kong, Tokyo has now emerged as a surprise frontrunner. For more on this Wall Street Journal exclusive, Sam Westren spoke with reporter Ben Dummett in London.
It's been a long journey for the Saudi Arabian oil company to make a public offering, and we've learned that they are going to go with this two-stage strategy. Could you just tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, initially they were looking at an IPO where they would simultaneously list on the domestic exchange called the Tadawul Stock Exchange and an international exchange. But after many false starts, they're reviving the plan, but this time they're taking a different approach where they're going to list initially on the domestic exchange, selling a small sliver of the 5% stake that they previously targeted they would sell, completing that, making that a success, and then next year following that with an international listing on, well, right now it looks like they're leaning towards the Tokyo Stock Exchange over London Stock Exchange, Hong Kong, or New York.
And do we have a timeline for when this might happen?
No, I think we know that Aramco is looking at doing the domestic listing in Saudi trying to do it before the end of this year. You know, the success of that will help determine the timing of the international listing. But at this point, they're looking at sometime in 2020.
It looked for a while like the London Stock Exchange was making a big push to bring this listing to London. Similarly, there was interest from Hong Kong. But it looks like both of those have lost out at this stage. Could you just tell me a little bit about that decision?
Yeah, in the past, when Aramco was looking at an international listing, London was at the top of their list, along with Hong Kong and the New York Stock Exchange. The London Exchange, UK politicians, have pushed hard to try to woo Aramco to consider the LSE as a listing venue. They've similarly, exchanges and officials in Hong Kong and the US use similar tactics to try and woo Aramco to their exchanges, because it would be the largest ever if it goes through. But because of Brexit and the controversy around Brexit and the increasing possibility of a hard Brexit, there's concerns that that could cloud the future of the LSE. So as a result of that, they're looking at Tokyo as an alternative. Similarly, Hong Kong, which was another alternative, is challenged by the fact of the pro-democracy protests that are going on there and the clampdown by mainland China. So that's created a level of uncertainty about listing on the Hong Kong exchange. So as a result, they're now looking at Tokyo. I mean, Tokyo is a big international exchange. It's been home to some of the largest IPOs ever, including last year's IPO of SoftBank's mobile telecom unit. So that showed obviously that they can manage big IPOs and that there's an available investor base to absorb the kind of offering that Aramco might pursue.
That's the Wall Street Journal's Ben Dummett speaking with Sam Westren in London. Former FBI Director James Comey violated the agency's policies by sharing memos about his interactions with President Trump in 2017. That's according to the Justice Department's Inspector General. Joining me now from Washington to explain is Wall Street Journal reporter Aruna Viswanatha. Aruna, let's backtrack. This goes back a few years now. Remind us what was in these memos and who James Comey shared them with.
Right. So these are a total of 7 memos that detailed all of his interactions with the president between January and May of 2017. And so some of the ones that might jog people's memories the most were the ones in which Mr. Comey alleged that the president had asked him to, quote, let Flynn go, see his way to letting Flynn go. And then in another one, he had had a dinner with the president in which the president allegedly asked him for his loyalty, and Mr. Comey responded that he would have his honest loyalty. So these are things that people were talking a lot about a couple of years ago, and maybe people don't remember as much, but they detailed all of those interactions that he had with the president. He's fired in May of 2017, and a few days later, he ends up sharing the contents of a few of these memos with his attorneys and with a friend who is also acting as his attorney in order to then share some of the details with reporters about his dinners with the president in order to kind of generate some public outrage about what the president was doing.
Now, President Trump, of course, as you mentioned, fired James Comey in May of 2017. So what is the potential impact of these findings that he violated FBI policy? The Justice Department has already said it won't prosecute Comey over their release.
That's right. So the ultimate impact of this at this point is not a huge one, but it's pretty damaging, I think, to Mr. Comey's reputation in the long term. I mean, it's saying that he took these actions that violated FBI policy in a way that was essentially sort of designed to further his own agenda and not necessarily what it was that the FBI as an institution wanted. Mr. Comey's response is that he did it to serve a greater purpose, and he thought that it was for the benefit of the country to get this information out there, but it was at the expense of following established rules and sort of giving the institution itself, the FBI itself, a role in determining what to do with the information.
And what have we heard from James Comey about the Inspector General's findings after they were released today?
So soon after the report was posted online, Mr. Comey tweeted that he essentially wanted an apology from some of his critics who had called him a, quote, liar and a leaker, which are terms that maybe the president has used on occasion about Mr. Comey as well. But he was just pointing out that the inspector general found no evidence that him or his attorneys had shared any classified information with the media. And then he thought he kind of deserved an apology.
Wall Street Journal reporter Aruna Viswanatha joining me from Washington. Thank you so much, Aruna.
Thanks for having me.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.